All right. Again, I want to thank you all for taking the time out to join us today. This is, Kirby said, this is an open meeting. It is being recorded. We're all learning to do meetings a different way. All of a sudden, there's a lot of feedback.
Excuse me. There's someone echo in the background.
Thank you. We're here today to, I'm going to ask that the legislative members, when you speak to your proposals or you got feedback on the proposals, while Amy's really good, sometimes she doesn't know our voices and she can't see our faces. So if you would please identify yourself as you speak. We have three proposals today that we need to look at and to discuss. During this process, we'll determine if it's a legislative proposal, a rule consideration, or something else. We have Zach here for guidance and Kurt when he does join us.
I'm here, Debbie.
Okay, thanks, Kurt. At the end, we'll decide what proposals we're going to recommend to send to the commissioner for consideration. What I'm going to do is I'm going to ask that Region 6 start first. So, Region 6, would you share your purpose of your proposal and brief discussion as to why you think this needs to move forward?
Well, this is Lynn. The purpose of the proposal is to enable people who have concerns about family members or who, as a mental health professional, I have concern about that is not able to make an informed decision about A&D treatment, to enable us to be able to involuntarily commit to that treatment. That's the bottom line. And the reason for it is because we don't have that mechanism right now. We do not. And this is personal to me, and I get a little bit passionate about it. So if I do that, I apologize. But I have experience with this. I lost my son and my daughter-in-law to opioid addiction because we couldn't get them to go to treatment because they were not capable at the end of making an informed decision about what they needed to do. Even after losing their children, losing custody of their children, even after having legal issues with it, they were not capable, and that's what happens when you get to that stage of addiction. So, you know, expecting people to be able to do that, in my opinion, it's not rational. We can get somebody committed when they're suicidal. We can get somebody committed when they're homicidal and putting someone else's life at risk. We need to be able to do this.
Other discussion? Questions?
This is Robin. I was just wondering what the success rate in the other states that were listed was of sobriety after involuntary treatment, if there were any statistics available on that.
That is a very good question, Robin, and I did see something about Florida, and I think the success rate was almost the same as a voluntary admission. Probably it's a little bit low, and I don't remember, and I should have those numbers in front of me, and I apologize for that.
Well, that's good feedback. It's at least good to hear that.
And what about the financial impact here?
and I'm not a math person and I'm not a financial person. I did the best I could with that. If you look at the amount of money that we're losing in this state every year from people who are not treated, the money that's being spent for hospital admissions, for incarceration, legal costs, loss of income for these people because they can't work. Yes, it's probably going to cost, I think I figured, about $31 million if we,
okay.
if we involuntarily committed 1,500 people, which it probably would not be that high in the first few years. But if you look at the overall savings, if we get these people back in the workforce, if they're not getting admitted to the hospital, I think we will come out saving several millions of dollars. Sorry, y'all. That's my dog telling me he wants more food.
This is Elliot Pensley from Region 4. What do you envision the criteria being for qualifying for this? I know for involuntary admission on the mental health side, there's very, well, it's not totally clear cut, but there's at least a standard of commitment criteria, you know, meeting imminent danger to self or others as exhibited by certain different symptoms usually related to homicide or suicide. So what are the criteria that you envision here?
Well, I think if we look at the criteria for severe substance use disorder, we can base it off of that. I don't know that we necessarily would need to have somebody have a legal involvement in order to do this. It would be great to be able to catch them before they get into the legal system. Again, I'm going to go back and reference my personal experience. If someone has lost their children due to, you know, repeated testing dirty, or the court has had to step in because they're not caring for their children appropriately, that can be a criteria. Repeated hospital admissions, repeated overdoses. I mean, we need to look at that. It needs to be very carefully spelled out. And ideas would be great.
So
certainly, I think that's
Robin.
What I'm going
to go. I was going to say, so I think some of the things that you're saying, I think it's in, I get the gist of this, and I appreciate especially the suffering that goes on for parents like you and others. I think we need to maybe flesh it out a lot more. I know that there is probably going to be a lot of pushback from folks in the peer field. As a NAMI person, we sit on both sides of the fence. We want the rights of the individual, and we want the rights, you know, of the family. We're concerned for both because we know the heartache that comes with this. But I see some things that you've done, some footwork you've done as far as identifying things like having children taken away, and but I think we need to get some things down as far as time frames, you know, different things, just some more real concrete definition in there.
Yes. I absolutely agree.
Yeah. But I see where you're going, and I have some concerns about it, you know, from the standpoint of the individual and individual rights, but I also, you know, certainly understand the family side.
You know, I share your concerns about the individual side of it. I go back and forth about that. I do, but I come back to, well, you know, they're killing themselves, and we don't hesitate if someone is suicidal.
Right.
So, but yes, it definitely needs to be spelled out.
This is Amber.
Hi, this is Diane Sherrod.
Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead, Diane. You can go first.
Hi, this is Diane Sherrod, and I just would like to just say, I work for the Lifeline Peer Project. I'm a peer advocate and peer coordinator And I work a lot with people with substance use disorder, particularly opioid disorder and overdose, high-risk overdose. And I just want to say, just to kind of give you an idea, I was in a situation this past 2 weeks with a young man who was a heroin addict and a meth addict. And I don't know if he got a hold of some bad drugs or what happened, but he was in a state of crisis that was so alarming. I mean, to the point, it was horrifying. He was posting on Facebook Live. I actually was able to get him into detox. I was able to get him into crisis stabilization, but he would leave every time because his paranoia was so inflamed. And he finally contacted me. He was in a parking lot at McDonald's. He was suicidal. I mean, the drug-induced psychosis took him to a place where he was suicidal. I had no choice but to call the police to get someone there. And I asked him, I said, please approach him gently. He is afraid. He is paranoid. Please, no lights or sirens. Make sure you get a CIT-trained officer. None of those things happened. He was surrounded by four squad cars, lights blazing, sirens blazing, and he took off running. Anyway, to make the long story short, we moved in and out of the phases of suicide versus drug-induced psychosis, and at no time was that boy, he was a very young boy, he's 21 years old, at no time was that boy safe in a situation that he was creating for himself. And I spent all last week pretty much just holding my breath that he was going to either die from an overdose or die from a suicide attempt. And I understand the concerns about the person's, you know, constitutional rights, but at no time was he able to make his own decision. And luckily, I would like to say I was late getting on the call today because I was able to get him into Pathways. We're able to get his medication stabilized. He's back at work. He's able to, you know, talk, and he's able to talk about what took place, and he's able to recognize, you know, and his awareness is so, it's very inspiring that he's now aware of what happened and what took him to the place, the dark place that he went to. And with proper medication and counseling, he's going to be okay. And I just want to say that, you know, I don't know if this law would make him have made a difference in that case, but I do know that it wouldn't have, I don't think it would have ended up the way it did with the sirens blaring, and I don't know. It was just awful. But anyway, I just wanted to share that.
All right, so this is Gail. Okay. This is Gail down in Region 3. I guess my question is, so in order to put something forth as a proposal, do we need to outline what the commitment criteria would be? Like, is that required before we move forward on this, or?
Well, my question was going to go to Kurt and to
great.
Zach.
Sorry.
No, you're perfectly fine. Is to weigh in here.
Thank you, Debbie, and thank you for the questions. My answer to that would be an absolute yes. In order for us to move forward, we will need a fully fleshed out proposal from that perspective, because it will require drafting bill language that would potentially mirror the involuntary commitment statute under the mental health side. And so that would both be criteria, who would be required to evaluate that person, who would be responsible for transporting that individual based on the evaluations. Again, if we went down a similar path of the involuntary commitment for folks that are in crisis now. And then the next part of it would be folks that are indigent or don't have insurance coverage, similar to what we deal with on the mental health side. What will we need to do, and who would be responsible for their treatment, and what facility would be responsible for their treatment? So I think the biggest question that I've had as a result of the proposal is, of course, the infrastructure on the current involuntary commitment process with the regional mental health institutes is there, but I'm not aware of a similar structure for substance use disorder and where those beds, you know, especially if we're, you know, estimating potentially 1,500 people. I know the department doesn't have residential treatment capacity at this point, so we would need to get into that discussion too. Where would that treatment capacity come from? Would that require the state to build additional facilities similar to the regional mental health institutes, or is there opportunity in the private provider sector to build out that residential treatment in order to accommodate those? And then the last thing is also we would have to figure out what the court involvement would be. As you know, with involuntary commitment as it stands now, that there requires that procedure requires your two certificates of need and then the probable cause hearing, and then the ultimate determination by the court whether that person should be involuntarily committed based on the criteria in the law. And so all of that would have to be part of a legislative proposal to make that determination and to move forward.
And this is Ricky. Can I ask a question and pardon my ignorance, but what's the process of just the committee itself adopting a proposal and putting it forward? Is that something that has to be voted on, or does that have to go before executive committee or the commissioner? How does that work?
What happens is we do. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Debbie. I didn't know if you wanted me to answer. I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead.
Sure. What'll happen today is legislative and executive committee will vote to adopt their proposals, and then those are then presented to Commissioner Williams to determine whether or not those proposals are presented to the governor's office, and then the governor's office ultimately has a decision on what's included and what's not included in the legislative package for 2021.
And somewhere in there, in that process, it also goes, the recommendations go to the planning council. So
that is correct, the statewide council. I apologize for missing that step.
Is that before or after, Commissioner?
So in this situation, because the statewide meeting is not until after the deadline that we have to submit to the governor's office, the adoption by the full council will need to happen after that deadline. But we, again, if the council decides that they want to not adopt something, we can always go back to the governor's office and say, hey, this is one that the council has decided they don't adopt. We'd like to withdraw this proposal. But unfortunately, timing wise, this year, with the deadline that they've set for the governor's office proposals, we'll have to get all that information into the governor's legislative office before the statewide council meets.
Okay. Did answer your question?
Yes, Ricky. Thank you.
Okay. All right.
This is Angie. What in the other states that have adopted this, what has been the uptake? I mean, how many people have been, you know, have gone through the process? How many, you know, beds did they need? You know, what is going to be the volume? 1,500, I mean, I don't understand exactly where you got that number, but I understand you got to, you know, at least put out something. But I just didn't know if there might be some history we could draw on so that we had a better indication of what the fiscal note may be.
Okay, I believe I'm pulling it up right now because, again, I'm so sorry. I should have all of this in front of me, and I don't. I'm kind of scattered. I believe in Florida, under the Marchman Act. In 2017. I had it, now I can't find it.
While she's looking there, Zach, if I can go back and ask you a question. excuse me. From what is our, okay, I hear you say that all this, these criteria needs to be fully fleshed out. And if this group voted to adopt to move this forward, how much leeway time do we have before it goes to commissioner, before it has to make it to the governor's office? Is there time to flush all this out, I guess is my question, based on the timeline the governor's office has given you?
So just to give you an idea of the governor's timeline, we have to have all of the proposals, including bill language, turned in by June 1st. That's the drop dead date.
Okay.
And they've made it clear that no proposals will be accepted after that.
Okay.
As far as presenting to commissioner, we can present the idea of the legislation without the language, and then once, based on her determination on what moves forward and what does not, then we'll have about 2 weeks to craft the actual language and the details of that proposal.
All right.
This is Elliot Pinsley. I have an idea or a suggestion, and I really, Lynn, I appreciate you sharing your experience, and I can't even imagine the anguish and helplessness that everyone involved may have felt, in you especially. And this is such an important issue, and we unfortunately hear far too many stories that have similarities to this one, and they don't always end well. And I have some personally and professionally, I have some concerns over this exact proposal, for reasons due to infrastructure and how do we actually do this and how do we prevent it from being abused, as well as, protecting civil rights and knowing that there already mm-hmm. are some abuses given the other laws that are in place on other for other applications for mental health and such. So this is, it's a really important idea. The idea is something about the system is not working right now. We have problems with our system. I'm not talking about the department. I'm talking about just somewhere along the way, we are struggling to help these individuals who are not able to always know that they're in obvious need, or as obvious of a need as we all see it. So I'm wondering if maybe we could, instead of trying to take this specific proposal, which needs a good amount of work in data and criteria, and really I'd like to see what happened in other states and not necessarily be the guinea pig personally on something like this, but maybe we could create a subcommittee or a work group or something to specifically examine the addiction treatment continuum and treat, all those factors involved. You mentioned law enforcement response and lifeliners and everybody, and maybe try to identify gaps from a statewide perspective. And I know I might put her on the spot a little bit, but I know Angie and Metro here in Nashville are working on some things locally to look at, some systemic reviews of what can we do to look at the failures, or not necessarily failures. When someone died, I think we would consider it a failure in a way that can hopefully change things for the future. And we might be looking at that for a proposal next year, or that might be done some other time. But anyway, that's an idea that I have here.
And this is Amber from Region 5. I just wanted to throw out there that with the Title 33, what we're looking at is typically they kind of rely on suicidal or homicidal. And this still presents danger to self. It's just a different aspect of what that looks like. And to me, like hearing what everybody's saying, that's the crack that we're trying to fill in. So I love the idea of kind of fleshing this out a little bit more and what that would look like.
I like the idea of the work group. This is Lynn again. I like the idea of the work group, and I like the idea of several of us getting together and examining this and maybe trying to flesh it out. And because don't worry, I'm going to keep bringing it back.
All right. So let me,
maybe next year we could bring it back more fleshed out.
All right. So let me ask this. I need to, excuse me. Lynn, this came from Region 6, so you're the
yes.
owner and the writer of it. We need to make a decision as to whether or not this is something that we want to vote to adopt to move to the commissioner, her then make a decision whether it needs to, she wants to pursue this with the governor's office, with knowing there had to be a 2-week time period where a lot of information had to be flushed, or is it a vote to hold it and flush it out with a small work group and then represent it next year? So you being the owner of this coming out of Region 6, I'll ask what is your recommendation at this point?
I'd honestly, I'd like some more work to go into it before we move it forward. Just my opinion.
And okay. Lynn, this is Rob. I think that's a great way to look at this. This is too important an issue to just give 2 weeks on.
Yeah.
You know, you want to really flesh this out and get your data and find out. And it's going to take some time. I appreciate you bringing it forward. It is an important issue, and you are certainly not the only family member struggling with this. Too many people have been. I applaud that.
Thank you. Zach or Kurt, any other comments from you before I call for a vote on this?
No, ma'am. If the work group is the will of the committee, that certainly can go forward. Kurt, did you come in there? I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I think Zach is correct. I think that is a good way to approach this, and I would even encourage the work group that is established to look at this very thoroughly and examine it from all angles, not just the angle of trying to make it happen, but trying to look at it from, is this the best thing to do, to be open to those types of data that might come in, to make sure that we're making that the work group is making a sound, thorough, deliberative recommendation to the legislative committee next year.
Okay.
This is Kim Parker. Can I make a quick recommendation or suggestion that the work group is to be developed that comes from the department? Sort of like what we did as a group with the Department of Education on the mental health curriculum in the schools. It did not go forward for recommendation to go as, you know, through as a legislative proposal, but there was a lot of work that was done within that, and to have, you know, that some involvement with the department, I think that would be a really good thing to do, is to, so that we make sure that we have all the right players involved in the work group across the state.
Hey, Kim, this is Kurt. We're always happy to be an administrative help. I don't know if the department wants to get in the middle of trying to make a policy decision about this particular issue, especially since there seems to be some really enthusiastic advocacy already existing on this committee and in the regions. I think we'd like to remain a neutral party on this and see what the ultimate recommendation would be. Again,
okay.
We're always happy to help with the administrative setup if we
okay.
can help arrange a room or a conference call, those types of things. Absolutely.
Okay, that sounds okay. good.
All right, Lynn. All right, so I'm trying to double check my Robert's rules of order. So Lynn, are you going to pull this back out of submission for this year with the intent that a work group be put together to look at flushing this out for possible moving it forward next year?
Yes.
Okay.
And I apologize for not being more prepared.
No, you are perfectly fine. You are perfectly fine. Is there anything, I'm just doing a check with the people who keep me in line. Kirby, is that all that has to be done on this one? Is the fact that Lynn, Region 6, is pulling this back out for further consideration and flushing out for next year?
Yep, you can move on to the next proposal.
Okay. Before I do, though, I would like to ask the members of this group, and I would also want to as to who would like to serve on this work group to try to look at flushing this out. And I know there would be other substance abuse providers across the state who would also want to be involved in it. So if I could, if you would send me an email letting me know if you're interested in working on helping flush this out. And Lynn, if you could send us that link to that Workman Act of 2017 in Florida. And
sure.
Then I'll reach out to some of the A&D providers and put together a small work group to try to flush this out to move forward next year. Is that okay?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Thank you. Okay, Region 4, you have like a proposal for additional survey questions. So, Elliot, you want to take the lead on this one?
Sure. Is that the one you want me to jump on now?
Sure.
Okay, great. So I will turn your attention to the legislative proposal number 3, which is titled Workforce Shortage Survey. So we presented most of the information you'll need in the proposals here, and I think the heart of this issue is workforce shortage, the fact that across the entire state, in virtually every area of the state, we have designated provider shortages for behavioral health care professions. And I had the opportunity to assist TAMHO at the end of 2019 in studying the issue of workforce, and produced a paper that we've referenced here. So a lot of the supporting information comes from work that has already been done for the purposes of efficiency. But the long story short, we don't have anywhere near enough behavioral health providers to meet the current and expected demand for these services. We have major concerns over the medical providers that serve on the behavioral health side, and especially groups like psychiatrists who are, we're expecting half or more to retire by the time we get to 2025, and I have just a gut feeling that might even increase because of everything else that's happened recently. So we as a region, and also as a legislative committee for Region 4, all felt it was absolutely critical that we find a way to work strategically on resolving the workforce shortage, or working toward not having one. We also recognize the fact that in the current climate and through this process, attaching a large fiscal note can be a major barrier to these proposals moving forward. So we thought hard and tried to find ways to approach this without having to come directly out at a loan repayment program or other kinds of subsidization, though that is likely needed in our opinion. Instead, we looked at what other states did, and New Mexico some years back did a survey along with a whole lot of other sweeping initiatives, which was really amazing. They really tackled this. They got a strategic plan in place as a result and took action. But one of the things they did was very interesting because it didn't take a whole lot more resources than were already there. So this was taking those surveys that are already required for licensed healthcare professionals when they renew their license or go to get their license. There are questions about whether or not you have committed a crime in the last however long it has been since you has last responded to one of the surveys. Have you had any lawsuits or other litigation against you or anything like that? A few other things. They also ask about your practice and such. So what we are proposing is that there be a set of questions developed that would be able to be applied in a standard manner across multiple disciplines, as many as possible that relate to behavioral health. So this would include social workers and counselors and psychologists and nurses, and as well as psychiatrists and other forms of doctors who would be involved. And in a way that does not require any extra survey tool or communication platform, it's really just adding to what's already there. While a great report would be really nice, we also don't expect that to be provided because we know that that can take significant amount of resources. So what we are asking in this proposal is for survey questions to be developed with the intention of gathering data that will help the Planning and Policy Council, the Department of Health, the Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services, the governor and the legislature to really get a better idea of what the shortage, what's going on here in Tennessee that's contributing to these shortages, and what we might want to address in terms of a strategy or plan. So that is the essence of the proposal. And I think I'll just stop there and ask it what questions there may be.
I have a question, Ella. This is Debbie. I understand the questions and that, but I'm confused, so I'm going to go to Zach and Kurt. All of us that are licensed under the Department of Health. So how does doing this under the Department of Mental Health impact licensure over in the Department of Health when mental health don't license us to begin with?
So that was I was informed. Oh, did was that directed at me or Ellie? I'm sorry.
Zach or Kirk,
go ahead.
Primarily.
So thanks for that question, Debbie. And that was going to be something that I was going to address in my comments. You are correct. We do not have any oversight or real administrative connection to the licensing boards with the Department of Health. And as a result, it would be my opinion that this would be a legislative proposal that would come through the Department of Health, since this is something that would be attached to their administrative and regulatory boards that they oversee. I'm happy to put our folks in contact with Brent Culberson, who's their assistant commissioner over the reg boards at the Department of Health. But as far as proposing something from the department that would specifically impact another department, I know we had this come up a couple times last year. It would be difficult for us to move this forward as a department since this doesn't really directly impact. Again, the work of the results could definitely impact the department, but as far as the implementation, it would be a complete implementation requirement, at least on the initial onset, by the Department of Health and not the Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services.
And so we definitely, this is Elliot again, we definitely considered this greatly. I drafted the proposal last year that led to the collaborative work group between the Department of Education, Department of Mental Health, and the Planning and Policy Council. And I certainly understand that there are complexities involved when we're including other departments, or they would be involved here. But as Zach alluded to at the end of his comments, this absolutely does relate to the Department of Mental Health. In that we're talking about not having enough providers to deliver the services that fall under that department and the contracted providers and so on. And I think, you know, the commissioner knows very well that this is a major issue that we're facing and we need some help. There was a bill that was proposed in this past session about loan repayment, and it did not proceed. And we're not really able to get much traction, it seems, on this, even though we're in, honestly, crisis mode, in my opinion, and that of, I think, many others that are closely studying this issue. And now we have COVID and other issues at play where we expect prevalence to increase based on everything that has transpired. So we feel that absolute urgent action is necessary to address the workforce shortage. And we would have loved to provide a proposal that would have stuck just within the Department of Mental Health, but knowing the only way we could think of doing that would have a huge fiscal note led us to this other creative idea. And as I have come to understand, there are some, if you were to try to engage the individual licensing boards and other things, that can be a little complicated. I have heard from some who are directly involved with this that a push from above would be helpful if we really want everybody to collect the same kind of data and provide it. So this data could come from other places if the department were to issue a survey, but given that we could do this through existing surveys, that's why we chose this path. And we feel like the department can help provide leadership here along with the Department of Health and work together on a way to get this information and develop a strategic plan together. So I think both departments are very much involved in this issue, and it is unfortunate for the purpose of this proposal that these health professionals do not fall within this specific department we are talking with now. But we hope there is at least a path towards some sort of formal collaboration, if not to proceed with this proposed legislation to try to get at this issue.
My second question would be, in doing so, is this a rule or is this a legislative issue?
It is a legislative issue because of the standardization that we are requesting across the board, at least in our estimation. I think if we were saying that we were talking about a single board or something else, I think that could be done regulatory, but we are suggesting something that would then need to be reported out as well. So that's our estimation. But if Zach or Kurt feel otherwise, I'd love to hear.
This is Kurt.
I will also need to take a look. As far as what the Department of Health through their boards ask on licensure applications and survey, I'll need to look through the rules and regs there to see where that is. That is a good question. They may very well have those questions and form requirements within their actual rulemaking authority. So I can go and check that, and I'll try to do that as quickly as I can while we're still talking. But that's a really good question.
And again, I just want to be clear, we're talking about the standardization of this as well and the reporting outside of that department, which I'm not sure can be necessarily, I guess it might, but I think we have to be practical here. And if we're going in one route, it's very unlikely to happen compared to another.
Other comments?
Oh, this is Robin.
I think it's just so very important to be able to deliver something, come up with something that we can deliver that will give us a really solid focus on the workforce issues that we've got. I mean, we see them kind of hit and miss. I like this because it feels like it's kind of aggregate, throughout. And I think it would be helpful. I don't think. I could be wrong, but I really don't see that as far as a cost perspective, which I know we're all extremely aware of right now. It just seems like this would be a really good way to gather some information, get it in the hands of those that need it, and help us to make a plan going forward on workforce development. So this is one of the reasons when LA brought this up. And in the way that it was done creatively before, I think that our department, the Department of Mental Health, and other departments, I'm very pleased to have been part of the EDGE, working with the Education Department. And I like the fact that we don't stay in silos. And when we have an opportunity to jump out of the silos and work cooperatively, we take it. So I think that this could be another opportunity to do that.
Thank you, Robin. Other comments?
Elliot, this is Ricky. I had a clarifying question. As I understand it, though, the survey questions, if you will, would need to be included in the questions or in the process, rather, of a person applying for license through the licensing board. Is that correct? Uh-oh, he may be on mute.
Sorry about that. I apologize. I kept myself on mute and then accidentally muted myself back without looking. So what I was saying is this is the survey that is automatically is required and mandatory. And it's done online now at the time of licensure and relicensure. As far as I understand it, it is a uniform requirement across all health related boards in this state.
Okay. So, but that survey comes from the health related board, not from the Department of Mental Health, right?
Correct. Yes.
So I guess that's the only question I have in terms of it being a legislative issue. I understand the collaboration, cooperation, and frankly think the Department of Mental Health does a great job among all the departments doing that kind of collaborative work. But it just appears or sounds to me that this would need to be something that the licensing board, the department authority over the licensing board would need to bring to the legislature. I guess I don't understand what the Department of Mental Health would be asking for, unless it's appropriate for them to ask for another department to do something.
I think, again, we're looking at the data. The data is what's needed, and the data is housed with another department. So it's a good question, and we don't know how to get at it. All I know is that data is currently there's nothing being collected, and we have an opportunity, and we've seen this done successfully in another state, and it was done via a legislative path. So we are using, you know, what's already been done and can pull from model legislation that already exists.
And I'm just pondering, but I wonder if, and of course this will be up to Commissioner Williams, if the Department of Mental Health would be interested in first going to have a discussion with the licensing board about gathering this data, if the legislative process is even necessary. And again, I'm just thinking out loud. Kurt, Zach, you may be able to stop my thinking right away. There may be things I don't know.
Kurt, Zach.
Absolutely something that we could do. I have a very, and we all do, we have a very close working relationship with the Department of Health. And that's something that I would like to get a handle on, whether or not the application requirements are in the rules that are individually promulgated by the boards. Or how that is structured. But Brett Culberson is the assistant commissioner there. Over the health-related boards, and we went to school together, and that's something that I would be exceptionally comfortable with discussing with him. And again, I think the concern from our perspective, you know, typically when we propose, and again because of the process that we use, that it becomes a legislative proposal of the department. It becomes very difficult without specific guidance or approval from the other department that we would be directing another department or the boards that are considered independent entities to do something when it's not our purview to do so administratively. Again, the Department of Health has that administratively attached, so they have more authority than we do, but that becomes difficult for us to tell another department, we need you to do your business this way.
No, we certainly understand. And
okay,
we appreciate that.
Or whoever it was, is that it, you, Elliot?
That's me, yes. I was just going to say that we certainly understand that, and our hope through this proposal, and we realize that given what happened with what we thought was a very strong proposal last year and the fact that we know if another department is significantly related, the odds of this moving all the way throughout this process are low, if not zero. But we hoped an outcome would be that there would be some formal collaboration that the Planning and Policy Council could be either involved in or just track.
All right. Any other discussion before we take the next step? All right. Let's look at proposal number three, workforce shortage survey. I'm assuming, Elliot, at this time I'll give you the lead to whether you make a motion to move it forward or make a motion that we look at doing some time of formal collaboration like was done with the Department of Education last year. So I'll let you take the lead since it is Region 4's proposal.
Absolutely, I appreciate that. And I think I will ask also Robin or Angie to chime in if they disagree, but I think we would like this being a group, a concerted effort. And I know that there are administrative headaches, and I can see some faces right now or imagine them as I'm saying this, that we're asking for the facilitation. But really, I think I can speak personally, and I think there are others in Region 4, and I imagine in the other regions that want to help here, that we have ideas, that we, I've been studying this issue and become more of an expert on it, and we want to help with this, and we know how challenging it can be. And I think we just want to help facilitate that as much as possible and be involved if we can, or help, you know, for whatever these departments may need. But I think we need some assurances that these groups are, you know, are collaborating on these issues and knowing what's going forward. And it would be great if we could start either some work group or start to receive some sort of regular communications specifically on workforce shortage.
Hey, Elliot, this is Kurt.
Okay, go ahead, Kurt.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, totally understand that. But to echo what Zach has been saying, and I think what Ricky's been picking up on, and I think that you and the people who put this proposal together kind of realize it's going to be up to health and their boards as to whether they want to engage on this, if this is something that rises to the priority that they're going to have, especially in this post-COVID-19 environment. So we can certainly, like Zach said, reach out to their assistant commissioner. We can't control what reaction they have to it and whether they have the bandwidth to engage.
Totally understand and appreciated.
So, Elliot, what is your recommendation? What are you requesting?
We know this will not move forward. So I think, just to be clear, we know this will not move forward to the governor if it goes to the commissioner. Last year, we moved it, the similar proposal, if you will, on the mental health education to the commissioner, and then it led to the formal work group. So I really, if we can get straight to that step, that would be great. I think it would be very interesting if the commissioner could at least see this, even if we're not asking for action on this, since it is an idea that may not have been broached in our state. So I think I'm deferring to Zach and Kurt as well to help advise on the best way to move this forward, given what we're requesting.
Commitment to you that I'm absolutely happy to bring this up with Commissioner, and this is something that I will speak with my colleagues at the Department of Health about and ask what the process is for this, how they go about including questions and surveys on licensure applications now, and what kind of lift that would be administratively for them. I absolutely will do that. The thing that I was going to ask you for also is if you had a list of questions that you and your team that formulated the proposal had in mind, I think that would be very helpful for us moving forward as well.
And Zach, I appreciate that very much. I think the trick with the list of questions is that we don't know how responsive the boards will be and the limitations of their survey platform and such. So we did not put too much into that. And it really can be, I think this is where we hope the Department of Mental Health may have some interest in that. Maybe there are some things that you all are wanting to know, and then we can design some survey questions around that. So That's why we suggested a work group. But if you would, it would be helpful for me to provide examples from or point you to the surveys that were done in New Mexico. I'd be more than happy to.
Extremely helpful for them to conceptualize what that looks like. If we can give them an idea, this is what it looks like in other states. Is this something that would be possible?
When might you need that? Is there any kind of a deadline you need on that, or the next couple of weeks are fine?
Perfectly fine. As you know, they've definitely got a significant workload at the moment too. So.
All right. That's good with me. Is that good with you, Robin and Angie?
So you're officially saying at this point to take no action as far as moving it forward as the legislative proposal, but we'd like to see it go to the commission for consideration of letting Zach look at some of working with his Department of Health partners to see where this might go, but just to put it on the commissioner's table to know that it is something that is of issue.
That sounds correct.
Okay. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed likewise? Okay. Thank you, Elliot. Thank you, Angie. And wait a minute, Robin. All right. I figured out what to do with all my papers here. All right, the next one is legislative proposal number two, reducing stigma through changing the department's name. Again, I'll defer to Elliot.
Okay, I'm sorry everybody has to hear so much from me today. But this is a lengthier proposal. It does have a lot of research put in there. We tried to really curate the most key pieces so that you could really see what stood out to us instead of having to check the sources yourself, but the sources are also there. Long story short, we're proposing that we change the department's name by changing the word abuse and substance abuse to use, like substance use. And this is all related to research and scientific evidence on stigma and how the term, the phrase substance abuse is specifically one shown to increase stigma and those perception biases that folks have toward individuals who have an addiction or use substances. So I'll tell a joke here, but, you know, I think we've got the department that I think it's a very long name. I usually abbreviate it by stopping after mental health in a conversation after I've mentioned it the first time. So we floated many ideas around about shorting this, but we really don't want to, you know, change much of anything. We're okay with being very clear that this department covers, you know, behavioral health, but these two major components. But we did feel it's the right time given what's happening federally, what's happening in other states around the country, what's happening in other areas within our own state, to really follow the literature and evidence and really our own state law and start adopting best practices. So best practices can change. And that's where we are now. So while the term substance abuse is still used among many folks in our community and in our industry as well, the term substance use or substance use disorder is much more clinically accurate at this time. After the change in the DSM, that language when we used to say substance abuse was eliminated from the clinical diagnostic criteria and the codes and diagnoses that are used by providers, insurers, and assigned to an individual. So really what we found in looking at the literature was extremely overwhelming evidence I didn't see anything really that came out to us in our review that countered the argument that the phrase substance abuse or substance abuser leads directly to some very unfortunate unintended consequences. Those are a lower likelihood that an individual who is using substances is going to access care. That was one finding. The next one is that because of the bias or perception among providers when that label is applied, to an individual, the quality of care also goes down. And then in turn, we have not as great of outcomes for healthcare outcomes for these individuals. Those are all pretty significant things, and I think we can all agree that we want to increase the quality of care, improve access, and improve outcomes. That's what we're about. So we do realize that changing just the name of the department isn't going to solve the issues of the world. But what we see is the department is a model that many others in our state follow and look toward for leadership. And we know that the department does the same for, you know, the governor's office and in turn for the federal government. And the federal government issued a memo in 2017. It was the Office of National Drug Control Policy through the White House, strongly encouraging federal agencies to cease using the phrase substance abuse, among a few other phrases, in favor of other language that is less likely to promote stigma. And that is a pretty telltale sign that this is something that is the next wave. This is the future. It's really with best practice. We looked at if you look in section two of the proposal, you'll see that we examined the current code and really some of these standards held for the Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services as of now, and things such as, you know, effectiveness and timely and the best practice, and I'm paraphrasing here, but you can see a lot of phrases that really signal that, you know, we want to aim to do the best possible thing for the citizens of Tennessee, and the literature just is pointing now to the time now to change and start trying to move away from language that may have been popular or accepted, but is not really the best way to describe a condition at this point or a set of services. The other states have been taking this very seriously as well. If you look at the very last section, we detailed what's happening in some other states. This is not comprehensive by any means. These are just the ones that we were able to immediately confirm had actually changed the name of a department or division that did effectively the same type of work as our Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services, and that they have changed and stopped using the phrase substance abuse in the name of their department, many of them through legislative processes similar to what we are suggesting. So there is a lot of research here. We also think that overall, as I said, if others follow the lead of the department and we start to reduce stigma through the language that we use, and this becomes more pervasive in the positive use of a different set of terminology, then we could see significant positive fiscal impact from this because more people could be accessing care, leading to better care, better outcomes, healthier people, and fewer tragic circumstances. So that is the essence of our proposal, and I'm definitely willing to answer any and all questions.
Eliana, this is Ricky again. Was there a fiscal consideration when you went through this?
Absolutely. We certainly consider that. We know that when you change, I was, you know, as most of you know, I previously served as director of marketing for the largest behavioral health nonprofit in the state. And I know that when you make any sort of change to branding or program or department names, it can be a challenge, but it is very mitigatable, if you will. I'm not sure if that's actually a word, but what we have looked at is this is not something we are asking for a quick and everything needs to change immediately. We can't expect that. Even in myself, when I started to move away from this language, in my own practice and, in speaking with others, you know, I would catch myself sometimes and maybe even occasionally I still do. So, the same kind of thing is what we are proposing here, that we start by changing the name in code, and that is the lead that the rest will follow. And then we are not suggesting that we take any money to immediately change anything else. But as stack of brochures or materials, for example, or business cards start to run out, they could be replaced by ones that then have the new branding on it. So the cost is not going to be incurred because we're replacing materials that don't need replacing. So that was the consideration, and we also took into consideration the significant potential for modeling that would lead to positive fiscal impact to offset any of that.
Other questions?
Thank you. I'll just say this. I appreciate the thought around being conservative as you make changes to that logo, and certainly for an organization size like mine or maybe others, that would be an easy thing to do. My concern is that would be a difficult and confusing thing to do for a department as large as the Department of Mental Health, and I think it would be confusing for consumers to do that as well. I just fear the timing might be off for the spending on something like that, as all the providers are struggling through what's happening with COVID right now. Anyway, that's just my thoughts at the moment.
I certainly appreciate that. I'll say that we, in this proposal, we are not suggesting any spending that has to be required under this. So we are totally okay with this being a slow phased rollout as resources allow.
Other comments?
This is Avis. Just a little history for some that may not know or have been on our council as long. I believe Debbie was on the council, as you've been for a long time when this occurred, and maybe some others that are on the call, maybe Kim and some others. But if you remember, and I just want to let Elliot know and the other group know what transpired years ago, when the department was named the Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse, which was formerly Alcohol and Drug Abuse Services in the Department of Health, that moved over to our department, and we did a combine. When the name change occurred, the council was involved in that name change. And as a part, and I was here at that time and worked with the council on the name change. At that time, the commissioner, who was Commissioner Betts, did engage the council into suggesting some department name, and she involved the council in that process. Just to let you know, though, sorry, that's my other phone. Just to let you know, though,
didn't have it on mute. I apologize.
Some of the department ideas for names and suggestions did include, and Debbie, chime in, or Kim, if you remember as well, we came up with quite a number of names. I think it was about 8 or 10. But in that names, behavioral health was one of those names that was suggested, along with substance use, substance abuse, mental health and alcohol, drug abuse services. There was a lot of names. And out of those names that was selected, the name that we have now currently was selected. But I just wanted you to know, Elliot and others, behavioral health was on the table at that time and was not selected. Not that that has any bearing on if the department name can be changed or cannot or whatever will be involved, but I just wanted you to know that that was on the table and it was not selected, as they didn't feel like the name embodied at that time what the two main divisions for program services, which at that time mental health and then substance abuse, bringing that together, including both of those names, was the one that was selected that best represented the department at that time. Just wanted to throw that out there, a little history.
No, thank you, and I really appreciate it. And that is actually something we considered, given that while we thought about the Department of Behavioral Health in this situation, we did not go that route, knowing that this name was chosen for a reason. May I ask what year that was that those discussions took place?
If my memory serves me right, it was around 2010, 2011.
So the I can jump in because I did a little research on this too. The bill that actually changed the name of the department was in 2012 during the 2012 session.
Okay.
So that, like I said, and I'll have to defer to Kurt for the history on how that worked its way through the legislative process, since I wasn't around for that. I was a meager legislative assistant at that point and was focused on other issues during that session, but I'll have to defer to Kurt on how that proceeded and what kind of lift that was. I did look at the fiscal note just to give you context there, and the fiscal note on that did assume that the department would replenish resources as they were needed, rather than doing a wholesale change at the same time. And the fiscal note was not significant. I will ask Kurt though if that was the true cost of what happened, or if that is actually what took place when that happened in 2012.
Hey, thanks. And Avis is absolutely correct, is that, you know, in 2010, 2011, I think there were discussions, and then the bill actually was introduced in the 2012 legislative session and passed at that point. To my knowledge, I haven't done any backwards look on this, but I don't think there was an outside fiscal cost, because we did use materials with the old name until they were used up before ordering new stationery, new business cards with the new name. As far as making its way through the legislature, it was pretty smooth sailing. I think we had some good talking points at that point in time, because substance abuse, as Avis stated, was new to the department. It was important to Commissioner Varney for that to be reflected in the name of the department, so that people knew what the department did. You know, previously when I started working for the department, it was the Department of Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities. It had had a couple of names before that. It's changed names a couple of times since then. We were Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities, and we were just Mental Health, which was really, really easy for about a year. And then we were called now. So my recollection of working the bill in the legislature was that it was fine. It was, I think I had one legislator kick up dust on it, wondering why we were doing that. And I did get questions from the governor's office, now that I think about it, asking, hey, is this going to be the last time y'all need to change your name for a while? Because there had been a lot of that activity. And they actually did bring up, they said, well, can't y'all just call yourselves like something shorter? And we talked about behavioral health. And I think at that time, Commissioner Varney did not think that there was a familiarity with what that term encompassed. So again, his idea was that it'd be very clear when you looked on the website, looked on signs in the building, looked on business cards, exactly what the department did. So I hope that's helpful in the discussion that the committee's going to have.
That is extremely helpful, and I really appreciate that. And we recognize that this is not the same reason behind that, but that is helpful to confirm that, as far as we know right now, there was no significant fiscal cost associated with the change, so we could expect the same with this. And I will say, given that timing, so the discussion took place in 2010 to 2011. The bill came out in 2012. And if you look through the proposal in Section 2, you will see that the research we are citing just emerged really in 2010 and a little bit before that. But there has been a lot more research that's been put out, and literature, and then, of course, the 2017 White House memo. So while this was not really a major issue of focus for other states, and you can see the same, we found it since 2013, a handful or more of states have made these changes since then. So while we certainly don't want the department to have to come back and deal with this every year, I know as a marketer and brander how difficult that can be. We do feel that the terminology being used is just contrary to the the overall mission and goals of the department at this stage, given what the current research is showing. And we feel that it can be a really positive conversation that takes place as a result of this. And maybe it could be eye-opening and conversations with the legislature and governor's office talking about how much stigma really does impact things and service delivery and outcomes. So I will stop there. I've made my pitch here, and I think I know I speak on behalf of our regional council and our legislative committee that we are very much in support of this and hope the others will see its merit as well.
Any further discussion, comments?
I think that was all well stated. I appreciate the points of view from everyone on that. And we do recognize that, you know, this is a very busy time, and with a lot of considerations. We would just like to see the consideration given to this, at least to have a look-see at this time.
Who's speaking, please?
I'm sorry, that was Robin.
Okay, thank you, Robin. Okay, hearing no further discussion, I would entertain a motion.
Can we motion for our own proposal?
Can.
I'll make a motion to move this on to the commissioner.
Is there a second?
Let me get off of mute here. This is Robin. I'll second.
Okay, Ken. All right. I need to ask, is it possible to get a second from another region since the motion was made by Region 4?
This is Mary Nell Osborne from Region 2. I will second the motion.
Okay, thank you. Is there any further discussion? Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Those not voting, because I didn't hear as many ayes as I have members on the phone. That was my concern.
Do you need us to say our name and confirm? Or?
Yeah, if you would, please.
Okay, this is Gail. I agree.
All right, give me your regions when you do that, please.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Region 3.
Okay.
This is
Leah. Yeah, this is Zach. From a parliamentary procedure, unless someone objects to the outcome of the vote, a voice vote with the ayes prevailing is perfectly acceptable. So.
Okay. All right. That'll work
okay.
Then. Thank
I
you, Zach, for that.
Does anybody have any though?
Okay. So it will move forward with that vote.
Does anybody have any though? I can't give you a raise.
Now that the vote's over with, I'll put my 2 cents in. I initially reacted to it.
Debbie, I can't hear with all that background.
Can y'all check your phone, please, for muting?
That was me. Sorry, guys.
Can we go back after you motion for those who oppose? Can we go back? I couldn't hear. This is Amy. I just couldn't hear.
Okay. Zach came in and said a voice vote would carry unless there was opposition to the vote, voice vote. So no matter how many gave a yes on it, unless somebody came back with a no against the vote, the voice vote as went would carry. Did I get that right, Zach?
Thank you, Debbie.
If there were folks that did vote no and you weren't comfortable with the margin, then we could definitely do a roll call vote. But since no one voted no, and all the voices that signified aye were multiples, then that will carry. And again, unless someone objects to the outcome of the vote, then we could do a roll call. But I don't believe anyone has put an objection forward.
Okay. Did that answer your question?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Is there anything else Kirby, that we need to cover that I have failed to overlook?
No, I think that's about it. We'll have a follow-up meeting after Zach meets with Commissioner Williams.
Okay.
A follow-up meeting. Yeah, I'll keep you posted.
This is Avis. One other thing. There is a step, Debbie.
I knew there had to be a step. I couldn't get off that easy.
That's right. The step is.
I got a lot of letters.
You got it. Yes.
I knew that. I got an old one pulled up here.
That's right. So from the legislative committee, you will draft a letter to the executive committee with the recommendations from the legislative committee. And then from there, the legislative committee will entertain that information or make a decision on that information. Even though that they voted and both of you are on the committee, there still needs to be a formal communication with the executive committee. Zach will take this information back to the commissioner, and then, as Kirby said, we'll come back at a later time with the recommendations from the commissioner or the outcome of the meeting with between the commissioner and Zach and what she wants to move forward. You can follow the same format with the letter that you have previously done, I think, in the last several years.
Okay.
Step that I needed to mention, if you don't mind, in order for us to
go ahead.
Move forward on this call. We all need to wish Kurt Hipple a very happy birthday. Today is his birthday, and I think it would be difficult for us to adjourn without recognizing that.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Kurt.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. She did. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Zach. Thank you, everyone, for the birthday wishes. It's been a good day, and I can't think of a better way to spend it than with the legislative and executive committee. So thanks so much.
Oh, you are such a politician.
Thanks, Robin.
Kim, are you still on the phone?
Kim had to leave to get another conference call.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to give her a final word as chair of the planning council, if there was anything she wanted to add or say to it.
She texted me. She had to step out.
Okay. I thank everyone for your time. Is there a motion to adjourn this meeting?
I move. Robin.
Is there a second?
This is Mary Nell from Region 2. I second.
Thank you. Any objections? If not, vote with your feet, and in this case, vote with your fingers and hang up your telephone.
Thank you.
Bye, guys. Thank you, everybody. Great meeting.